You're very welcome back to the programme. Thank you very much to Councillor Kieran Brogan, John McAteer, editor of the Tyrconnell Tribune, Damien Dads, editor of the Inishowen Independent. We really appreciate their time this morning. Someone messaged in talking about the gender balance on the panel. I understand where you're coming from, and I don't want to get defensive here, so I'll count to 10. We had female participants. Unfortunately, they pulled out because of illness. And I think, you know, rather than one segment, just take a look at the overall contributions on the programme. In fact, me and Caroline were on a podcast recently, Any Other Crack. I don't think I've actually mentioned it, but it's the only podcast me and Caroline have done together, the only one I've actually done at all. But anyway, we kind of referenced this and the difficulty and the struggle it is to get women. And I think this is the same reason as to why it's harder to get women to stand in politics too. Come on, because, you know, we want, as always, to be as representative as is humanly possible. But it is a great challenge. But if you're going to judge in the round and not in one segment, and the guys too, they represent half the population. Many women voted for them as well. You know what I mean? Let's not get too woke either. Donegal to change the name to Dublin in an attempt to access better health services. Would that work? Let's try it. Very passionate speech there by Damien about the lack of services, but again, it's the usual us against them rather than all of us getting a fair share of the hospital services. Who makes these decisions and whose responsibility is it for pitting one hospital against the other? The people really need their reps to step up at this about this front and centre. And they are stepping up. I'm hoping to speak to Deputy Padraig McLaughlin a little bit later on, because as I mentioned just before 10, the treatment of our politicians, of all political persuasions, all parties and none, they were told that this decision was being reviewed by the head of the HSE here. And then they were told, they learned that actually that's not happening. The decision has been made and is being sent to the minister. You know, so it's not just individuals that might feel that they're being treated unfairly here. The political classes might as well too, because they've been told one thing and have gone out and said it publicly, whilst it would appear, unless I'm missing something, something very different is happening behind the scenes. And we're not going to let it go. We're not going to let it go. You know, that's just the bottom line. You know, this decision, someone's going to have to explain this decision. Someone's going to have to explain what argument was made for Letterkenny. Someone's going to have to show us the business plan for Sligo. Show us the business plan for Letterkenny. Point out why Sligo was chosen over Letterkenny. This is something that's not going to go away. And the questions are going to be asked. And I'm going to continue to ask them here. It's not about taking anything from Sligo. What was the business case for Sligo? What was the business case for Letterkenny? Let us see them. We're paying for this stuff. What was the business case for both? And why did Sligo trump Letterkenny? What was the decision-making process for that? How many people made that decision? Why was that decision made? And until such time as there an answer, I'm going to keep asking that question. And I would hope, and I presume, and I'd expect our politicians to do the same. Let us see the business case for Sligo. Let us see the business case for Letterkenny. And then tell us why one was chosen over the other. Who made the decision? Where was that decision made? Very, very simple answers, but it's not going to go away. So, you know, the HSE, like a lot of organisations, monitor the media. You know, we're going to be asking those questions and we're going to ask them until we get the answers. The politicians are going to be asking the same questions until they get the answers. This is not going to be one of those stories that just disappears and then in a month it's gone. Show us the business case for Sligo. Show us the business case for Letterkenny. Tell us why Sligo was chosen over Letterkenny based on those two business models. Who made the decision? Why were politicians told that that decision was being reviewed when it's subsequently been learned that that decision actually has been made and is being forwarded to the Minister for Health? Who decided to do that? Who gave the commitment to the politicians to review? And then who decided that actually this business model is going to go to the HSC as it stands? You know, these are very, very, very critical. And it actually goes to the very heart of the governance of the Sealta area. Because they're very, very simple questions, and if they can't be answered, or that evidence or documentation can't be provided, it's very, very, very important. And I would hope there's not a politician going that would rest until such time as these answers are given. because this is the potential to be huge. It is already huge, but it's not going to go away. It is not this one's not going to go away. All talk and no action, divide and rule. Again, Sligo versus Letterkenny. Politicians are not acting. They are in the government parties. So get the government to put more money into health. I'm sick listening to this year in and year out. I appreciate your view. No one's looking to have Sligo lose its surgical hub in favour of Letterkenny. In fact, it's Sinn Féin policy, if I'm not mistaken, as the biggest opposition party, to have two surgical hubs in Donegal, let alone, you know, taking the one from Sligo and put it in Letterkenny. I've not heard a single person suggest that Letterkenny should be given a surgical hub at the expense of Sligo. And maybe that's not been made clearly enough, but I've not heard a single person even suggest that. Morning, what can the normal people of Ireland, what are they supposed to do when it comes to the genocide in Gaza? Our government is good with talk, but not action. Time to force through the Occupied Territories Bill now, but extend it to all goods from Israel. We need action, not words. The nursing home abuse has been happening for years. Only reason the state-owned RTE media outlet is broadcasting it now is because of the government. They're going to introduce assisted suicide as a solution. That's one point of view. Never heard of so much waffling from Councillor Brogan about meetings and process, bluffing the public all the time regarding the hospital. Listen, on this one, all the politicians are in the loop with the medical professionals. That's just the way it is. I know where you're coming from. I understand that that might be your point of view. I understand that you might disagree with Kieran Brogan's politics, but in relation to this, the Oireachtas TDs seem to be united in their views, and there's cross support too amongst the councillors. My husband is 6 months dead. He died in a nursing home in Donegal. I've never received any condolences or sympathy from the nursing home. He was 64 years of age with Alzheimer's. I cared for him for 5 years, but I had to put him into a care home. I regret this and I will never forgive myself. My husband had a 20-centimetre tumour. He died screaming in pain. I was on the phone constantly trying to get him pain relief and cared for. He was falling all the time. He had to get stitches in his head. He was soiling himself and having to sit in wet clothes. He never got any pain relief and we knew that he was in pain. When the doctor finally came in with morphine, he lasted one day and then died the next day. I can't forgive myself for putting him in there. It hurts me so much. Well, can I say one thing, please? Forgive yourself. You did what you thought was the right thing. And I'll tell you who would be really, really angry if you were beating yourself up the way you are. It's your husband. He would not forgive you for not forgiving yourself. You thought that you did the right thing and you put your trust, as thousands and thousands and thousands of people did, you put your trust in an institution that you thought you could trust. And it was they that let you down and it was they that let your husband down. The one person that didn't let your husband down is you. Okay, you did nothing wrong whatsoever. And please unburden yourself of any guilt or self-responsibility you have. You did absolutely nothing wrong. The people that were supposed to look after your husband, they have questions to answer. And try and get those answers. But you have done nothing wrong in this situation. You could never have known that this would be the case. It's very, very difficult caring for someone, especially someone with Alzheimer's. You did 5 years of it and you could no longer care for him at home. You simply couldn't. And you made a decision that was best for him. And unfortunately, you were let down. It's not your fault. So please give yourself a break. Your husband would not want, I'm 100% sure, your husband would not want you to feel the way that you did. It's not your fault. It is not your fault. The behaviour of management and the lack of materials and staff who seem untrained is not acceptable. Perhaps 50 patients should be the maximum allowed in one home. The costs charged should be adequate. The word greed comes to mind. Well, I suppose, and that comes in from Grania. I suppose it depends on how many beds there are, how many staff there are, how big the building is, but I do take your point. Right, legal questions to Seamus Gunn on the way, but actually I got a lovely handwritten letter. By the way, and it reads as follows. Could you please play a special request for our mum, Kathleen O'Hagan, who will be celebrating her 90th birthday on Friday the 6th of June. She's raised 12 of her family, 7 boys, 5 girls, all who are still living. She has 33 grandchildren and 14 great great-grandchildren. She's a mum in a million. She's beaten breast cancer, but now she has lung cancer. Never smoked in her life or drank alcohol. She always fights on. She's a great believer in prayers. I always take her and Dad to doing well and knock. Thanks so much, Greg. Enjoy your show. That comes in from this very special lady's daughter, Anne McHugh. So a really big special request for Anne's mum, Kathleen, who's 90 today. I hope you have a wonderful day. I've played requests actually on the show for you before. I know Kathleen because you're an incredibly popular woman. But what an amazing family you have. Seven boys, seven girls, 33 grandchildren and 14 great-great-grandchildren. We'll keep you in our thoughts in our home, by the way, as you take on your latest battle. We hope that you have a fantastic day. And look how many people you have around you. It's absolutely wonderful. Okay, thank you very much, Anne, for sending that in. It's lovely to get a letter. Greg, wish Rosemary Wilkin a happy 70th birthday today from the McCorkle family in Carrigart. Happy birthday, Rosemary. I hope you have a wonderful day as well. We are joined on the programme by Seamus Gunn of McLaughlin Gunn & Co. Good morning, Seamus.
Morning, Greg. Nice to be with you.
It's great to have you back on the show. Before we get to some legal questions, Emmanuel Macron, artificial intelligence, discuss.
Well, yes. I thought this might intrigue you a little bit, Greg, as well, because it's a sort of a journalist type story, and it gained traction maybe sort of middle of last week, and then some more afterwards, because what I thought was fascinating about this is not the obvious about the shove or the push, which was interesting in that later Macron said he and his wife were bickering or rather joking or whatever. It was the way they reacted to it in the media initially. The Elysee Palace, and there would be the spokesperson for his office as such, immediately said in the aftermath that it was false news. It was generated by AI and a deep fake. And that was put out there initially. And that went kind of, I believe, viral now. I'm not really up to speed, in the workings of that, but it certainly it traversed all the platforms and then became a real story as to whether they were actually saying this. And that was seemingly prompted by a previous incident of misinformation, where it was alleged that when he was visiting Ukraine only a few weeks earlier, he was on a train and he had a bag of some sort, a small plastic bag, whatever, and it contained some white.
Well, it was a tissue. It was a tissue that looked like a bag of Coke. Yeah.
And that's what so that was put out there. So then they using that, and on the back of that, then when this incident occurred, which was pretty embarrassing, really, or could be embarrassing, they thought, well, throw it in as a deep fake, and that will, as it were, take the scent off it, and people will start questioning it immediately, and that they will say, well, oh, it could be AI, etc. So therefore, he gains some more credibility if that's going to wear. However, whenever the full video then was published, they had to backtrack from that, and then you had him saying, "Well, no, it was we were bickering, and it was we were joking."
Playful slap in the face, as all couples at the highest level of politics have not. I mean, it was, yeah, there was a rush to cover it up. I think it's worrying, Seamus, and it's really interesting you brought this up. I think it's worrying that those who we should expect to be able to trust in sort of dealing with AI kind of use AI then to their advantage, if you know what I mean, by false positives, or however you might phrase it. That's kind of concerning, because it makes information, misinformation, disinformation, it muddies those waters even further. Who can you trust?
Well, yeah, that's really what caught me on this, is that the two sides of it could be wrong. It could be both misinformation, AI, fake news. And there's no way of editing. there's no way of sifting through. There's no way that you or I, Joe Public, can say, watching something on some of the platforms and, as news, and say, oh, yes, that's perfectly true. Now, you used to be able to trust certain outlets for your news, say Reuters, like, you know, world renowned, and say, but if they're being fed AI, then you could say, well, you know, could you question that as well? And the whole aspect of news reporting and truth and fiction becomes totally blurred, and you're left in what I would consider to be no man's land. Now, like even this week, bringing it right back home, that terrible tragedy down the country in the Midland, Carlow, last weekend, where a young man, you know, self-inflicted wounds, went into a supermarket, had a firearm, a shotgun, I think. He fired some shots in, I believe, into the roof of it, and then he inflicted the fatal injury on himself. Now, immediately after that, and this is interesting, and it has been mentioned, even I think our own Taoiseach has mentioned this about this type of misinformation. There was over 350,000 views on X, in which it was stated that there were seven people killed, including a child, in that particular incident. Mm. And it was absolutely and totally fake. And believe it or not, I up to yesterday, I don't think it was taken down as of yet. So,
because those that are engaged in that kind of activity, they are not going to sacrifice the views and the likes. They just put up another video saying that, okay, on this occasion I got it wrong. Just one question in relation to that, Seamus. The Gardaí took a step, and I wonder how well it was thought out. I understand why they did it. They very quickly came out and said that the person with the weapon was a white Irish male. Now, as I say, We saw when there was misinformation online before it led to riots and all this kind of stuff, or disinformation, or whipping things up, or whatever you want to describe it. I'm not commenting that, but it sets a precedent now, because for whatever reason, and they haven't explained it themselves, for issuing the race and the nationality of this person, they're going to have to do that for every similar incident now, surely, because otherwise they need to justify precisely why they gave that kind of information out at that time. Next.
Yeah. They leave themselves open to a claim, anyway, that it is not balanced reporting if they don't follow suit with the nationality in other incidents or similar incidents. It also identifies a certain type of person within the community as well, which again could lead maybe potentially to prejudice in the future. So, had the press office thought that through? Like, the decisions are made quickly, and you can understand how it can happen. And we're trying to get information out there, and maybe steering it in a particular type of direction. Mm. The balancing of it would be questionable if they don't retain it. And if they do retain it, what are the consequences of that? As you've said, there have been riots as resulted in this type of reporting before. So that's going to be a very difficult...
I think they've made a really, really... Yeah, they've made a really big mistake in that regard. I understand why, but they haven't thought it through, because the next instance where it's suspected, or indeed it is a fact that maybe it's a foreign national that has been involved in an instance on the streets of Dublin, for an example... If they don't identify his country of origin and his race, well, then it will seem to be double standards. And then the online speculation whips up. If they do, that could whip up a public reaction. So they'd be damned if they do and damned if they don't. And I think they've made a really, really big mistake here, and they've set a precedent, because there'll be lots of people saying, where's the race? Where's the nationality in this case? And I just think for an arm of the state, they've made a mistake there. They really have. I can understand the argument.
I don't disagree. And it leaves that opening out there for that reaction, as you have described. And that certainly would not be positive. Will it be revisited? You would think it might be. I would suggest that it was in the heat of the moment doing the report on it. I'm still very concerned about the post on X.
No, I get you. I understand that as well.
With so many people viewing that and initially taking that at face value, which we all would, and where that goes. And, you know, this aspect of fake news and how then it could be manipulated in the political sense, right across the world, in putting out, in dealing with a situation that you're not happy with, where there's a mistake, but you immediately put out that it's fake news in the first instance.
Yeah, and therefore,
you throw a certain amount of doubt on it, you dilute it a little bit, and you have people then wondering, well, is that true or is it not true? I mean, there's people questioning whether Armstrong stepped on the moon or was that all fake as well. So,
Don't bring me down that rabbit hole.
Where does it all end?
Well, you know, I think really
interesting too. In the last 24 hours, when you see the big fallout between the two big heavyweights, and you look forward to this, Greg, in the next week or two, like where XAI come into the equation, or how that could be used in relation to the sparring that's going on between Trump and Musk at the moment, and how maybe XAI could be used by Musk to strike back.
It's unbelievable. And I mean, he's even with words. I knew that they were going to fall out because you've got the world's most powerful man arguably against the world's richest man, massive egos. I knew they were going to fall out. I didn't think it would be as spectacular that in his third tweet, effectively, Elon Musk would say that the person that he spent his own personal wealth and time to get into power, Elon Musk says that he knew he was associated with a known paedophile. That's not the flex Elon Musk thinks it is, because he was privy to this information, that, in other words, that Donald Trump was in the Epstein files. He was privy to this information as he was getting him elected. Seamus, I'm going to take a very quick break. Back with more shortly.
Planning holidays.
I'll come back to you on that in a sec. Memories.
Atlantic Travel on Oliver Plunkett Road, Letterkenny, bring you today's 9 till noon show. See atlantictravel.ie.
Millions still owed to Acres Farmers. In this week's Irish Farmers Journal, we reveal how the department is set to miss revised Acres payments target. Full details on John Magnier's High Court battle for Barn Estate. All you need to know about slurry storage TAMS grants. Why learner drivers are going abroad for driving tests. Find out all about inheritance tax relief. And don't miss your final chance to win a Yamaha quad. All inside this week's Irish Farmers Journal.
Looking for a technology partner to help you reach your business goals? With cybersecurity solutions from Vodafone, your business can hack off the hackers. And with our collaboration tools like Microsoft 365, your business can bring the team together, wherever they are. Keeping your business secure and productive. Make technology work for you with solutions and support from Vodafone. Search Your Business Can today.
Meet the refreshed Volvo XC60 Hybrid, an electric SUV with a backup plan. Its electric range of up to 80 kilometers means you can do the daily commute emission-free, then switch to the petrol engine for those weekend road trips without limits. Book your test drive at volvocars.ie and be the first to experience the refreshed XC60. Or explore all the other fully electric and plug-in hybrid cars available at McGinley Motors. Volvo Cars for life.
As a brown bin kitchen caddy, I'm mad for munching scraps. Bits of meat, mouldy bread, back-of-the-fridge fruit. Nice. But when little pieces of metal, glass or plastic sneak in, it affects my waistline. Listen, I'm not blaming anyone. You're brilliant at brown binning and minimising your food waste. But do me a favour. Don't put the wrong items in the brown bin. Have a scan of mywaste.ie so you can keep it fantastic. Brought to you by My Waste, a Government of Ireland initiative.
New This Week in Home Store and More. All outdoor heating is half price.
But better hurry,
because when all our half price outdoor heating is gone, it's gone. Also, all camping and all bath mats are still all half price. But when all the half price camping and all the half price bath mats are gone, they're definitely gone. Drop by your local Home Store and More. Visit us online at homestoreandmore.ie. Home Store and More. A happy home.
Now we're in the company of Seamus Gunn. Sorry, Seamus, did you want to add something there? I just cut across you on the Trump-Musk tete-a-tete. Are you muted, I wonder? I think you might be muted, you know. Are you muted?
Yes. Yeah, as you mentioned there just before the break, Musk and his support for Trump. I was just saying, and he was aware of all this, whenever he put $300 million allegedly into the actual campaign itself. But to conclude on it, Greg, I believe it does come down to the personalities, of course, two very large ego type individuals that were never going, it was never going to last. It wasn't a marriage made in heaven. But the point is this, it comes down to money, basically money. And the effect that Trump's bill, the tax and his domestic policy bill, is going to have on Elon Musk. And yesterday, Tesla dropped 14% or something like that. The biggest drop ever recorded. It wiped billions and billions off Musk. And he is hurting from that. That'd be my view of it. And he's going to turn. So we can dress it up as we like, but the bottom line is, you know, and then he's saying he's going to take SpaceX out of the equation. And he's going to do X, Y, and Z. Because he left, he only left last, but in the last few days, he left his...
And I've heard people say...
efficiency office, he left in the last few days. Now, the efficiency office is quite unique because he said he was going to wipe billions.
2 trillion, he said. 1 trillion. He said 1 trillion, actually. He thought 1 trillion was achievable.
I'm going to have to correct you. I think it was two. I think it was 2 trillion he's going to knock off. But anyway, around that. So he's going to knock 2 trillion off the debt, which is about 36, by the way. But anyway, he's going to knock that off. In the time that he has been there, the devastation that he has wreaked all around him in all the different departments. I think maybe 1% or something less than that is what he's leaving with his P45. So I mean, it speaks for itself. But I think the bottom line is: look at the share price. Look at Tesla. If the subsidies are withdrawn, Tesla and those that are holding that stock might be looking for the exit stage right.
Yeah, and I've actually heard people try and argue that women are too emotional for big jobs in politics, believe it or not. Okay, Seamus, if a tile came off your roof due to the storm and it damaged your car, is your house insurance? Does your house insurance cover the repair of the vehicle?
I would think it's probably unlikely, Greg, that would cover it. Obviously, the terms and conditions of a policy, or the individual can look them up itself. But in general, the damage caused to the house with the tile coming off or the slate coming off, that will be covered under the terms of the house policy. Now, if it's a situation where that slate has damaged the car and is owned by the individual, well, for me, I would see that as a separate incident, and it's likely that the car policy, if it's comprehensive, will cover that. If it's a third party that is actually, unfortunately, has the car damaged, then it's a third party claim. And for that, you come back to the point of you have to establish negligence. And it has been, you know, said down through the years, like a storm is nobody's fault. And that's perfectly true. And it's also been described as an act of God, maybe more like an act of the devil. But I mean, you'd have to establish some type of negligence if you were going to go down the route as a third party claim. But I would see this as more the car insurance would cover the damage to that, and the house would cover, would household policy should cover the damage caused to the house in it. And if it's a landlord and tenant situation, which is often very common as well, usually the landlord's insurance would cover the damage to the structure of the house, while the tenant would have to insure their own contents of the house. So if that is some help, but I see them as slightly distinct, and as a third party issue, you have to establish some type of tort, and that may not be easy because you could be met with the defence of, oh, it's an act of God, it's a storm, it's nobody's fault.
Yeah. Check your access to on your car insurance. I don't know how much it will do up to
whatever it is. Yeah.
I have been with my partner for 20 years. We never married, but we have 2 children together. I moved into his home, and now I'm having to move out as we are separating. What, if anything, am I entitled to?
It's tricky. It is tricky. There are, just last year, there's a new Family Courts Act has come in towards the back end, 24, Now, it's to be introduced over a period of 36 months. I'm just mentioning this in passing because there are going to be divisional courts within the current court structure in the district court, circuit court and high court, which will be specifically designated for family law. And that's a very positive development if they can get it right and if they have the infrastructure there to in place and also the personnel that's going to be needed and have to up personnel in order to service it. This situation, and that might need to a bit more streamlining in dealing with family law issues. This situation that has arisen, as the caller describes it, is one where there may very well be a claim to be made by the individual against their partner if they have two children together and they have lived in a particular property in a dwelling as their family home during the course of their relationship. There may be a claim to be made that there is equity established in that. Obviously, and this is the new legislation, again, has highlighted this, it's the consideration of the welfare of the child that is absolutely paramount. So this is said here, as mentioned, that there are actually two children within this relationship. So I see that if there's a split, there may be a situation arising where certainly maintenance would have to be looked at. Mm-hmm. And then the next aspect may very well be access would be an issue with regard to whichever party has custody. And custody could be another matter to be teased out. And then whether or not they're entitled to a share in a property, that will depend on what type of contribution or what commitment they made to it. It is slightly more complicated in that I think the caller says moved into a home that belonged to the partner's family mm-hmm. rather than belonged to the partner. But at the same time, I wouldn't be disembowelled from saying that at the same that there is potentially a claim there of some equitable interest in it. But you would have to again go into the full background of the circumstances of the parties, what they actually contributed to it okay. over the years, etc. And work from there. But those are the headings that you think you'd be looking under.
Just time for a quickie. Can I add my wife's name to my house without affecting my non-contributory old-aged pension?
Well, it's probably a question for the Department of Social Protection and Family Affairs. But in relation to the OAP, it's means-tested, that we know. And the adding of an individual, I think it makes good sense. It makes good legal sense for this reason, and maybe this reason alone, that if the house is jointly owned, in that circumstance, if one passes away, the survivor automatically succeeds to it. So, and I don't consider that that's an actual asset that would be taken into account and reckonable for the purpose of assessing the pension. It's not as if they're getting an income of it; they're living in it, and it is just maybe putting regularising the situation for succession. So if you want me to make a call on it, I think not.
Okay, brilliant. But check with the relevant department. Seamus Gunn of McLaughlin Gunn and Company, thank you so much. People can contact your offices in Letterkenny and Remelton and also online. No yes, AI so. Either, by the way. It's genuinely officially him.
Yes, I think so, yeah. I don't believe it's AI. We haven't got to that stage yet, but maybe this show, maybe there might be a segment someday and someone will do that as well if we live long enough, Greg. But, yeah, we should be there, donegalslister.ie, or just keep it simple, gun.ie.
Thank you so very much indeed for your time. Now, Mr. Tony Canavan has some very pointed and serious questions to answer as it relates to the decision-making process that selected Sligo University Hospital for a surgical hub. What was the business model? What was the argument? What was the decision-making factors? What came from Letterkenny? What were the considerations there? Why was Sligo considered over Letterkenny? And just to be very clear, and I'm sure my next guest is of the view, no one's looking to take this from Sligo. I think the idea is that there's certainly the capacity for two. But I referenced a little earlier on a statement from Minister Charlie McConnell Logan, it came from others as well, that there was a commitment that this decision would be reviewed and there'd be a further meeting with Oireachtas members or public reps in a week or two. Now, through the offices of Padraig McLaughlin, TD, we learnt yesterday that, in fact, the decision has been made, it's been signed off and it's going to be on the Minister's desk next week. This is huge. Deputy Padraig McLaughlin, Sinn Féin Whip and spokesperson on Fisheries and the Marine. Your reaction to how things have developed over the last day or two?
Well, I said directly to Tony Canavan at the meeting where all of the Donegal public representatives, the TDs, senators and the councillors are on the HSE forum. There's also consultants present at that meeting from Letterkenny University Hospital. And we made it clear, united, that there has to be a surgical hub in Letterkenny. That's, we're tired of the discrimination that we've encountered for far too long. And that's, you could not justify, if there's one surgical hub, it has to be in Letterkenny, clearly based on the evidence, the population, the demand in the hospital. But we would very much be open to two, one in Sligo, one in Letterkenny, if that can be done. So that was how it was left. He said he would review and reflect on what we've said. But I had sent on some questions because the follow-up meeting was to be 3 weeks later. And I had sent some follow-up questions and they weren't answered. And I sent them again because they were looking forward to tie us down to a date for a meeting in a few weeks' time. But I hadn't got those questions answered. And what they were was, has this decision gone to the HSE board? Who makes the final decision? Is the minister involved? And will he put forward the Letterkenny, the business case for Letterkenny for the surgical club at the same time? Eventually he answered, and it's quite shocking, his response, and you would have seen it there, Greg, yesterday. He was going to come and meet us, and clearly he would have known when he met us, if we hadn't got this information out of him, that he put his recommendation to the HSE board last week and it was agreed. So the HSE board now agreed that Sligo is location for the surgical hub.
But were you not told on the 20th of May that he would come back to you having reviewed the process? So what's happened there? You just have been left high and dry.
Yeah, exactly, Greg. Like, and in fairness to some of the public representatives, they've said it on your show. They said it in private meetings with doctors who are 171 doctors, as you know, which is unprecedented, I would say, anywhere in the state, that level of doctors speaking out. And it was clear that he was going to review and come back. But I sent in questions just to have safety, just to have certainty about the timelines before we met him again. And you know what was going to happen, Greg, if we hadn't got those answers yesterday? We would meet him in good faith in a week and a half. And by that stage, the HSE board would have signed off on it and the Department of Health may well have signed off on it. So it is outrageous, the bad faith that we're encountering here, I have to say.
Yeah. Oh, and you're asking the same questions I'm asking, and I will say it is by coincidence. In relation to this decision, what was the business case for Sligo? Let's see that. We pay everybody's wages. That should be in the public domain. What was the business case for Letterkenny University Hospital, if any were made? And comparing one to other, what decision-making process happened that Sligo was selected? That this whole process has to be incredibly transparent. All of that information in its entirety, and we can go through it ourselves, needs to be out in the public domain. We need to know once and for all who's responsible for something as it's happening within the HSE.
100%, Greg, and I have written to him today, and I've made it clear now that he needs to provide the two business cases, the one for Sligo and the one for Letterkenny, that was sent to him last year, a year ago. He needs to demonstrate clearly what was the objective decision-making that led him to decide Sligo. We know, for example, the population that Letterkenny serves is higher than Sligo. We know that we have 24,000 inpatients per annum at Letterkenny. There's about 15,000 in Sligo. You know, that's a huge gap between what Letterkenny deals with and Sligo. I can see no possible explanation other than utter discrimination for this decision.
How can this be brought before the Oireachtas Health Committee? Is that possible? I know a lot of this is national, and pardon my ignorance if I don't understand the processes, but this is a situation where people in very senior positions need to be brought into that type of an environment and be compelled to answer questions.
Yes, you know, if need be, and what I've asked for now is for him to release those documents to us urgently, because this is going before the Department of Health. Ultimately, the Minister for Health now has to intervene. The Minister for Health said when you asked her when she was in Donegal recently that no decision had been made, and that she was going to look at all of the facts. But she needs to urgently intervene now. She needs to look at the arguments made by the 171 doctors in their correspondence to her, which are, to me, overwhelming arguments. This should never have been about Letterkenny versus Sligo, but that's what has been made now. We've been forced into this situation because we cannot accept. And as I say in the email, and you've seen it, Greg, to Tony Canavan, like, we have been given a briefing, the TDs have been given a briefing by surgeons and consultants at Letterkenny Hospital in recent weeks. And the briefing leaves us with an understanding that there's a threat, a serious threat to surgical services at Letterkenny, that if it's not resolved very soon, could threaten the actual emergency department at the hospital. That's how serious, and Tony Canavan knows this very well. The management of Letterkenny Hospital know this very well. And the surgical hub is a key part of tackling that. Of course, about reducing waiting lists, but about attracting the calibre of surgeons we need. This is a huge hospital, Letterkenny. It's the sixth largest hospital in the entire
state. Why is there then a legacy underspend where they've been running deficits in the millions? Why are we seeing a whole tranche of really significant investments into Sligo and Galway, but not the same type of future planning investments into Letterkenny University Hospital? Why are we being sold what many feel is a pop of a walk-in ambulatory centre, which could be 6, 7, 8 years ago away, according to... that we've been promised before as well. Does he also need to, in a very clear sense, timeline the future of Letterkenny University Hospital?
Yeah, it's much... The surgical hub is a must-win for all of us in Donegal. We have to win this battle. But there's a bigger issue. And I've said to you about the Sligo Hospital deals with around 15,000 inpatients, people who stay overnight every year. Letterkenny, 24,000. Letterkenny's way, way bigger. And we're the sixth largest hospital in the state. But if you look at the budget, the actual amount of money that Sligo and Letterkenny receives every year, it's almost identical. You know, the funding model has always failed Letterkenny for a long time.
I can't remember exactly who was in the HSC, tried to argue that meant that Letterkenny was getting the same money as Sligo, as if we're so stupid that we wouldn't divide the amount of patients into that amount of money.
Yeah. And as you know well, Greg, both hospitals are Model 3. If you look at Letterkenny, the sixth largest hospital in the state, if you look at inpatients, but I don't compare it to the Model 4s as a higher level of complexity in those hospitals. But if you look at the Dublin hospitals, which have less inpatients, they get double the budget that Letterkenny... the funding model has failed Letterkenny for a long, long time. What does that mean? That means that we have not the ability to attract the doctors, surgeons, nurses that we need to the hospital. And we have people in the emergency department. We have people waiting long lists. Like Letterkenny has the longest waiting list of any hospital in the Model 3. This is willful discrimination.
Is this from your perspective, because I've already outlined earlier on the show from my perspective, our perspective, this is not going to go away. Is it going to go away, as far as you're concerned, in the minds of the Five Oireachtas members? Because we are we are seeing a situation where there is genuinely full cross-party support for this. Are you going to allow it to go away? Because that's
the only... Thanks for asking that question, Greg. The good news is, at that recent meeting with Tony Canavan, all of the public representatives, which hasn't always been the case, I'm sorry to say, but they were all on the one page. They were properly briefed by the doctors and surgeons, and they stood up for the people of Donegal united. That needs to stay the case. And I said to Tony Canavan, and I would be saying it to the Minister for Health too, if they do not do what's right by our people, we will go out on the streets again. We did it over cancer services, 15,000 people. If we have to do that in Donegal again, we had to do it for defective blocks. We shouldn't have to do it. It's wrong that we're forced to come out on streets to get what everybody else gets across the state. If we have to do it, we will do it. Okay. But we have to do it united.
Final question, and of course, do you have faith in Tony Canavan?
No, I don't have faith in Tony Canavan, how he's handled the surgical hub issue. Absolutely not. He could not have been more clear, the opposition, the arguments from the Donegal public reps. And in good faith, people said he was reviewing his decision. And after persistent questioning from myself, we've now discovered he actually sent it up the line. and stood by his decision. And we have to undo that. We have to go over his head now to the Minister for Health and get this sorted out.
All right. Deputy Padraig McLaughlin, thank you very much for your time.